The island of Saibai, where Annie has been working the last 2 years, provides magnificent emergency care for not just those born to the Torres Straits, but also those who come across in small boats from neighbouring Papua New Guinea. Without people like Annie and her colleague Teresa and the health workers on all these tiny islands, lives would be lost. Some still are unable to be saved, but not without a tenacious fight from people like those on the team on Saibai. I remember clearly deciding when I was 10 years old, Annie said, that I was going to become a nurse and wear a veil. It seemed no time at all before Mum was picking me up from high school to go for an interview at a local hospital. The matron asked me, "Why do you want to be a nurse?" Not being experienced at interviews, Annie hadn't even thought about what she might be asked. She could hardly say, "I wanted to wear a veil," but she got the job. That was 72. While training, Annie was exposed to labouring women and the birthing of those babies and was fascinated and intrigued. She almost had to beg to be allowed into the delivery room and then had to stand against the wall, hands behind her back, to witness the miracle of birth. Soon after graduating as an enrolled nurse, a position sometimes limited by its less senior roles, she grasped an opportunity at the Loxton District Hospital in South Australia's Riverland for a student registered nurse. The matron only hired double certificate sisters, registered nurses who were also registered midwives, so it was a natural progression for Annie to further train as a midwife after completing her general nurse's training. 1977 was a big year for Annie. She graduated as a registered nurse, married a Loxton boy, Chris, and headed to Queensland for a 12-month honeymoon while she did her midwifery at the Royal Women's Hospital in Brisbane. In the 70s, that hospital had a large catchment area and delivered around 300 babies a month, with the capacity for more complicated pregnancies and deliveries, and proved an interesting place to train. After Annie completed her midwifery training, she and Chris returned to Loxton to live and started a family of their own. Annie muses that she became a better midwife after having children herself. Annie worked in the rural hospitals in Riverland as a midwife and also in the operating theatre for many years. She then went on to be director of nursing at that small South Australian hospital complex for 10 years, for a while running a small Bowen therapy business as well. When their children were grown, she and her husband decided they needed a change, so they rented their house out, set out for Cairns with two cars and a camper van, and Annie became the nurse manager at Cairns Red Cross. It sounds easy moving from one workplace to the next, just hitch up your van and travel, but there's nothing easy about fitting into management roles, creating cohesion in teams and smoothing change in the workforce while always keeping the best practice and patient care front and centre in your mind. But the real challenges came when Annie heard the call of more remote nursing. She thinks that was probably watching that helicopter take off and land from the Red H on Thursday Island every day, wishing she was aboard. So she and Chris moved out to Darnley Island in the Torres Strait for 2 years to work with the Arab people, with Annie as their remote area nurse. After 2 years on Darnley, of being on call nearly every night as the only nurse 90% of the time, of missing many beautiful dinners cooked by Chris because of a medical crisis like chest pain, child convulsions, the threat of an outbreak of a communicable disease, or even a terrible toothache, they needed a break, so they moved on again. This time they worked their way around Western Australia, with Chris making a living via his plumbing and maintenance. They zigzagged up and down the huge expanse of Western Australia, through Shark Bay, out on the Abrolhos Islands, doing a stint in the Kimberleys, until finally Annie and Chris settled on Saibai Island, a 6 by about 22 kilometre island that is mainly mangrove, muddy wetlands and a small village on one end. During the wet season, only about 10% of the island is water-free, while through the dry season, around 50% is not damp, but still has plenty of waterholes and mush. In fact, Saibai is sinking into the ocean and has been for years. The cemetery is slowly falling into the sea and the graves are threatening to float away, so the authorities are busily shoring up the edges with retaining walls. However, it is a thriving community of over 370 souls, with a local council, a school, shop, a pub, and the primary health centre where Annie works. Police, immigration, customs and quarantine also have offices there. Saibai is part of Queensland, though Annie's friends and family often say to her, "When are you coming back to Australia?" It may be Australia, but there are only 4 kilometres of water between Saibai and the Papua New Guinea mainland. And on a low, low tide, a sand and shell dry bar appears about 2 kilometres out, a place where Chris has caught many a fish dinner in his boat to bring home. This is the border between the two countries. Those born on Saibai are a proud people, with a long history and deep ties to their island. Their culture is family orientated. Their complex family dynamics can sometimes be difficult to understand from a Western perspective. Family ties are strong and extended, and children are well loved. Torres Strait has 15 islands with primary health centres and another 5 clinics on the northern peninsula of mainland Australia for the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities there. On Saibai, the public health clinic is a single-storey building only a few years old, but already stretching at the seams with the workload of chronic and emergency health needs of the Saibai Islanders and the usually dramatic but transient needs of the Papua New Guinean tribes people, who often arrive unannounced. Radio contact with PNG works poorly most of the time. Calls come via a CB radio, patched into a Telstra connection, so the quality is bad. Many PNG villages have no communication facilities at all. The clinic sits only 150 metres from the waterfront, but it's not easy access from the sea because the boat ramp is a few kilometres around the corner on the other side of the island. On the health centre side, it's all mud and slippery rocks to the ocean when the tide is low, but those from PNG manage the tricky transfer of injured loved ones from whatever small boat carried them from their mainland to the little clinic. The clinic on Saibai is managed by the Torres Strait Islanders health worker allocated to that role. It has 2 permanent full-time nurses and 2 advanced trained Torres Strait health workers, but it is rare that these clinicians work an 8-hour day, especially if someone requires air transfer to Thursday Island. Often it's 12 or 18 hours as they wait for retrieval teams to take the seriously ill into the centre offering a higher level of care. The work is constant, challenging and often a little too exciting. Tropical treatment, disease and emergency patients are unable to be fully managed on Saibai, but people arrive day and night for emergency care. Tuberculosis, malaria, taipan snake bites, accidental and not so accidental trauma are not uncommon. But some of the most life-threatening cases are the women who are brought over in small boats from PNG, in labour or having just birthed in the bush, or with sick babies. Apart from the nursing staff, there is a doctor who visits every 3 weeks for 3 days, and outreach teams fly in to assist with the management of antenatal women and chronic disease. Saibai relies on telecommunications. Video links with specialists can be accessed. Telephone advice is available as needed. But until help arrives, the hands-on nurses and health workers are it. Annie has hundreds of stories of emergencies managed on Saibai. I can only hope that one day she'll write a book on the many lives that have been saved by the clinic on this tiny island. But here I've concentrated on the ingenuity and gritty determination of her midwifery. Annie estimates there are on average 6 pregnant women living on the island at any one time. An outreach midwife flies in from Thursday Island once a month and the pregnant women fly for scans and birth to Thursday Island or Cairns. In between, they are managed by the clinic, but the bulk of Annie's maternity workload comes from PNG in little boats. As the midwife on the island, Annie manages a great number of unplanned antenatal labour and delivery cases, plus the challenge of premature and sick neonates. She rarely sees her Saibai mothers in labour as they fly out a few weeks before their due date to await their births. Annie has 1 or 2 premature or sick neonates arrive on Saibai every month from PNG. Having been born in the bush, their umbilical cords tied with vine runners and cut with any sharp object off the ground. Depending where they come from, maybe anywhere from 12 hours to some days old. They're often too sick or too small to suckle at the breast, are cold and wet from the boat ride across to Saibai and are not always breathing well. Thankfully, Annie says the mothers usually arrive in pretty good physical shape, but often they're understandably terrified their baby is dying. Sometimes they are. Annie tells the story of Hermes, a premature baby she met after a disjointed radio call from the health worker at a village across the water in PNG. Baby coming, boat, crackle, crackle, dropped, bad head, crackle, crackle. Annie smiles. It was almost a relief when the baby arrived and we found it wasn't injured from an accidental fall. Baby had never been dropped, but rather because it was 8 weeks premature and the long labour had shaped the head to look misshapen. The baby boy was in need of fluids, sugar and most definitely warmth. When managing babies, the rule is pink, warm and sweet, and young Hermes was blue, cold and needing some glucose. We set about warming Hermes and giving IV access, taking blood samples and liaising with the doctors on Thursday Island, who gave us fluid orders to rehydrate and give much-needed sugar to this little boy. I love the way Annie said this, as if it's easy to place an IV line into a cold 32-week baby's tiny veins. Believe me, it isn't. His temperature slowly increased until his heart rate and breathing improved, and we knew we were winning. We waited for the helicopter doctor and paramedic to come and collect Hermes and his mum to go to Thursday Island and then down to Townsville. I'm pretty sure it was a little more complicated than that, but that's what she said. Plus, it would take a while, and Annie would have philosophically waited for the sound of the helicopter as she kept the baby stable, watched over the mum, and hoped nobody else in need of help came to the clinic door in the meantime. Often they did. After a few weeks of stabilising and growing and fattening up, Hermes and his mum were flown back to Saibai before they headed home. They called into the clinic to visit Annie, who was hardly able to recognise little Hermes as the wee scrap of a baby she'd seen the month before. He was now a chubby, healthy, happy baby boy, and very much alive with no bad head. So Annie waved them back into their tiny boat, back across the water, back to the bush, where Hermes, Annie had no doubt, would grow to become a fine hunter.